The lines between environmental goals and corporate goals are quickly blurring, and they're blurring in a good way. Environmental and social governance, ESG for short, is now in the driver's seat. That's become fast apparent, especially this week as billions observed the 54th Earth Day. That's right, Earth Day goes all the way back to 1970. Although Earth Day is not new, the approaches for tackling many of the world's environmental problems are very new. I'm your host, Cody Combs, and in this Business Extra podcast, amid this week's reflections on Earth Day, we're talking to Amy Lahusky, the Director of Environmental Social Governance at G42, that's Abu Dhabi's artificial intelligence and cloud computing firm. She's someone tasked with crafting and executing the vision of ecological wisdom there. And joining me now, of course, Amy Lahusky, ESG Director at G42. It's been in the headlines a lot recently with a big $1.5 billion investment from Microsoft. That's quite impressive, to say the least. Amy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Cody.
So Amy, before we get started on the topic at hand, I have to ask, the number 42 gets thrown around a lot. There's G42, there's its subsidiary companies, there's the companies that fall under it. There's Med42, M42, Core42. We talk about it a lot. Why the number 42?
The source of the G42 name is very interesting. So we originally, people may be thinking, where's the 42 from? Is it 42 companies? The G stands for group, and 42 actually comes from Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with that book. Yeah. So it's quite an interesting, unique tale. But from that, we're learning, let's ask the right questions to get the right answer. And that's an ethos that we really bring into the company.
Correct me if I'm wrong about this. When I was growing up, I didn't know this position, the ESG director position, even existed. Was this anywhere on your radar growing up? Did you have a sense of ecological wisdom when you were younger? How did you get from A to B?
Really great question. So I, as my accent suggests, I'm from Australia. So I grew up in Canberra. In the Brindabillas, which is a beautiful bush city within Australia. And in university, I studied a combined degree of environmental science and commerce. So I've always had environment in mind throughout my career. So I've got about 20 years experience in this space. And navigating through the landscape, I always understood that we had to look both at the carbon side of the discussion and the commerce side of the discussion. Because if you don't look at the two, nothing's going to make sense. So in answer to your question, yes, I've always been quite passionate about environmental causes.
Did you know at that time, and again, I don't mean to sound naive, but there would be a ESG sort of position along those lines? Or did you think you would be sort of on the outside looking in and not necessarily part of a multinational corporation?
So environmental discussions within the corporate world isn't something new. It's actually just where it's placed on the agenda. So increasingly, it's gone higher and higher up in the food chain, so to speak, which is obviously very exciting and something that's very much needed. I think, for example, over the last week, we've seen extreme weather events here within the UAE. Globally, we're seeing this change, and increasingly corporates and governments alike are recognising how this is having a material impact on both the commerce side of things and society.
You sort of address my next question. G42 is approximately 6 years old. When I think of ESG, I think of these companies that have been around for 30, 40, 50 years. What does G42, and it's a very ambitious company to say the least, a lot, everything is happening with artificial intelligence. What does G42 think that it can bring to the ESG discussion?
So when we look at E, and again, we look at climate, we're currently in a climate tech nexus. And that's something we absolutely recognise within G42. So on the one side, the World Economic Forum reports that digital solutions have the ability to reduce the global footprint, carbon footprint, up to 20%. But on the flip side, we know that digital technologies, including AI solutions, consume vast amounts of energy. So we need to find this balance of how we can deploy G42 AI technology to improve efficiencies across our customers.
So how is G42 approaching that? Because it's something that all of these tech companies know that is a potential problem. They know the promise of all these AI LLMs, but they also know they're very power hungry. What is G42's approach to sort of finding the happy
medium? Happy medium, absolutely. So we are shining a light on our carbon footprint and actively developing our inventory to look to a low carbon future. And perhaps I need to show some sort of tangible examples within our operating businesses. So we've got our data centres. So we've got Kasna. Kasna has designed, built, and soon to operate its first green data centre. So that's located within Masdar City. 7 megawatts of power will be provided from the solar solution. And then looking at the demand side, the actual facility has been designed in such a way to improve operational performance. We can either look at other technologies such as M42's Med42, which is a large language model. I think you spoke about it on a podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we did.
But you can look at it from a sustainability point of view. So you're preventing people even needing to get in the car and drive to a hospital in the first place because they've got an app where they can ask the question and get a high quality response.
Along those lines, along the medical lines, this came up over and over again at COP28. I don't think it got discussed enough, actually. The link between planetary health and physical health. Can you expand on that? Is that kind of an overblown idea, or is that something that needs to get discussed more?
Again, a topic very, very close to my heart. So throughout COP28, M42 absolutely highlighted this link between planetary health and human health. And through the use of, for example, M42's Environmental Sciences Division, gathering large amounts of environmental data, using AI predictive modelling to understand how the planet health is changing over time. And this is really important when we're talking about climate change, because we're seeing things like increased temperatures, increased rainfall in new geographic locations, and this is directly impacting on communities, particularly those vulnerable communities. But by knowing that, knowing, for example, malaria's in new geographic locations, we can proactively deploy healthcare solutions so as to minimize impacts on these communities.
A couple years ago, at a World Economic Forum event, the computer scientist Stuart Russell, and this was before AI was on the tip of every tongue, I should point out, he said that there is a lot of optimism that AI can solve all of these climate woes, but he cautioned against AI solutionism. And he said something to the effect of, you know, when it comes to the climate, we know what the problems are. We know what the solutions are. We as humans, it's a collective action problem. We're just not doing it. Do you ever see it as part of your job to sort of say, okay, yeah, we can do all these tech solutions, but at the end of the day, you know, it's up to us? Or is that something that, you know, you might be not your sole focus?
It's absolutely a combination of human elements and digital solutions. And what we need to do is it's drivers for change. So the three key areas that are driving change across industries, not just tech industries, but across all sectors. First of all, looking at our regulatory environment. So increasingly, companies, corporate operations are being asked to disclose their environmental, social, and governance performance. And this is connected reporting with our financial statements. So that's a key driver for change. Secondly, it's demystifying the topic. So we're demystifying what AI can do in terms of solving society problems, but also demystifying in terms of ESG. It's such a broad topic. What does it mean for each sector? How fast should each sector be moving? What should they be doing in the short, medium, and long term? And that's through doing things like materiality assessments to understand. I know you're looking quite confused, but it's an assessment that looks at the impacts, risks, and opportunities as it relates to ESG for a company. And that will allow companies to proactively identify short, medium, and long-term targets.
Very interesting. And you talked about ESG and how it is one of those buzzwords, unfortunately, that a lot of people like to throw around and a lot of people like to just say, oh, we have an ESG department. Are there any misconceptions out there about ESG that you want people to be aware of?
It's complexity. So number one, complexity. And number two, it's about your outlook and perception and looking at it from an optimistic point of view. Rather than the news can be flooded with overwhelming information in terms of we're all doomed in the future, but no, in fact, if we collectively take action, we can actually change that cycle. And I've seen it happen throughout my career. I've got sort of 20 years experience in this environmental field, and I've seen companies and the biggest naysayers say it doesn't make sense to saying it does make sense. Sorry, and one of the last drivers for change, and this is very important, is the use of incentives. So that can be things like financial incentives, or it can be something as easy as an awards program to help people strive to do better.
How do you feel about the future? I know that's a very broad question, but You know, in the last few weeks, the UAE has, some have argued, experienced what might be a preview of some of these extreme climate events. So some might not be feeling so optimistic, but how are you feeling? You brought up that at COP28, a lot of these companies that weren't necessarily on board with this are suddenly on board. So how are you feeling? You don't want to get too Pollyanna about it, obviously, but I'm genuinely curious.
And so, Cody, I am an optimist at heart. I'm not naive. I like to shine a light on the risks, but ultimately, there is an optimistic mindset looking forward. And you can see that through collaboration and partnerships. You can see how communities respond collaboratively to these natural disasters. And they recognize, okay, this thing is real. Let's start shifting the dial and look forward to a low carbon future.
And going back to artificial intelligence, is there any area right now that you don't think that AI is being used enough in terms of positively affecting the future of the climate?
So underutilization of AI. So in terms of demystifying how really AI can drive efficiencies across multiple sectors. So AI, as you said, is an artificial intelligence holding company offering AI solutions for many sectors, including energy, healthcare, education, smart cities. So if we look at smart city solution, optimizing traffic operations, for example, if we look at Call42 and the use of their large language model, which is GICE Climate, that was launched in COP28. And that's a large language model which can be used to ask all your sustainability climate related questions. This was something that was done in partnership with Mohammed bin Zayed University. And it again demystifies the topic of AI and how it can be used to address the climate crisis.
And correct me if I'm wrong, GICE was the Arabic large language model,
right? Exactly, that's it. So it's been expanded to include the climate-related search function.
The climate-related search function, it also had, the name escapes me right now, but the other LLM that was...
MED42?
Yes,
MED42.
At the heart of that. So an ESG, correct me if I'm wrong, is not just about the environment necessarily either. It's about all these very, very important topics such as diversity, inclusion. And it's important to note that, you know, Arabic not get left behind a lot of these LLMs, because for the past few years, you heard about all these English LLMs, and it's relatively important to include Arabic. Does that kind of fall within your jurisdiction as well, to make sure that diverse voices have a seat at the table?
This is something I talk to my colleagues about as well. This ESG is a collaborative effort. So when we're looking at the S, absolutely diversity, inclusivity and equity is at the heart of the discussion. And having these tools available to democratize access, to enable those who may or may not have had access to this in the past, have access to these tools for the betterment of society. Similarly with governance. So that is absolutely bringing in the legal professionals, the compliance professionals, the risk professionals into the discussion. So a lot of the roles within ESG, both within G42 and other companies, is pulling together discussions from functional leads to understand what they're doing in the E and the S and the G space and coordinating to have a succinct policy moving forward.
On G42's website, several times you'll see right away it says, you know, we champion AI as a powerful force for good. It goes without saying there are a lot of concerns that the average layperson has about AI, about job replacement. But that right there, what does that mean? AI is a force for good. Is that sort of getting lost in the media discussion that, you know, it's slanted in one way that, you know, people are way too concerned about this and not looking at the opportunities?
Absolutely. So this brings it back to, what are the key challenges that are facing society today, and what can we collectively do deploying technologies to address those challenges? The climate change discussion is one. Diversity, inclusivity and equity is one. So it's utilising how this technology can be used for the betterment of society to address global challenges that are increasing in severity and intensity.
What's your hope, not just for G42, but when you look at ESG overall, what is your hope in the years ahead? What are some areas that you think it might be able to attack that it's currently, you know, maybe not part of the mix of the discussion?
So it's a complex discussion, and simplifying it through collaborative partnerships is going to be the solution. So ESGs, a lot of it is about large amounts of data, analytics and reporting. So having one consolidated approach, and this is where you'll see in terms of reporting standards, they're trying to move globally towards one set of reporting standards. So, for example, I won't bore you with the terms, but IFRS, S1 and S2, for example, is one global reporting standard that everyone's trying to move towards, because investors, community groups, employees, they really want to understand what is the performance of a company. And if you've got different companies reporting on different standards, it gets lost in the mess. So I think moving forward, having consolidated level playing field that everyone is reporting against, and we're seeing this trend in Europe with their standards that they're introducing, will allow people to importantly cut, not just look at the pretty pictures, but looks at the facts and figures in terms of past performance, the outlook and future performance.
And what was that acronym again? Can you extrapolate on that at all?
The IFRS?
Yeah.
So there's international reporting standards that are adopted within Europe. There's CSRD, there's IFRS. Historically, a lot of groups have used the UN SDGs. And they're, again, it's an alphabet soup of reporting standards that people can understandably get completely swept away with. And then that derails from the purpose of the discussion. If you've just got lots of legal people talking about these very complex terms, it sort of detracts from what you're trying to achieve as a company.
Nonetheless, though, as you pointed out, you do need a standardized benchmark, because it's easy for one company or another company just to create, oh, we're doing X, Y, and Z, and you know that's good for us. Whereas if it's a standardized benchmark across different continents, we all know where the companies really stand.
You do, but there's also, we need to understand geographically and within sectors, there are different opportunities and risks. So within Australia, when you're looking at the context, both from a community interest point of view through to the physical environmental constraints, they're very different from a place like the UAE. There are some similarities, but there's also differences. So the reporting standards, yes, absolutely should be similar in terms of what you're reporting and when, but the weightage of each thing that you're reporting on should vary.
Point very well taken. I had not looked at it like that. So I've definitely learned something along those lines. Thanks so much for joining us, Amy.
Thank you so much, Cody. Cheers.
That's it for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. Please remember to follow us wherever you get your podcasting content so you can receive all of our episodes as soon as they come out. This episode was produced by Doa Fareed and Arthur Edison.